is Spectrum.
Alternative Myth, Homeopathy, Secret Society, Hypnosis, The Paranormal, Alternative Energy, UFO Abduction, The Weird, The Wild, and The Wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. I'm Scott Jordan, here with my co-host, Tom Theophanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Hey, Tom, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Scott. How about you?
It's been a good week. Been a busy week, but it's been a good... Yes, but it's been a good week. We got a lot of interesting guests coming up in the next few weeks, and tonight we have Peter Terrell. And he has a company, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about him.
Peter brings a lifetime of environmental science to projects, having designed and managed numerous remediation projects. Peter is one of the co-founders of the Millennium Institution and has consulted to governments and business for over 25 years on a wide range of issues, from alternative energy to environmental remediation. He is recognized as an authority on composting human waste, and he has researched, lectured, and studied in the field of appropriate technology, pedology, biodynamics, conventional agronomy, and natural philosophy. So let's welcome Peter. How are you?
Hello, Peter.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Tom. Hello, Scott. How are you tonight?
Oh, great. Glad to have you on the show. Tom was mentioning that you're part of a company, Millennium, and maybe we can just get a brief history of what got you interested in your current activities and what you're doing right now, and maybe tell us a little bit about the company.
Okay, the Millennium Institution was founded to bring some of these new technologies into the marketplace and to bring these into current knowledge that people can understand and implement today, not in 100 years from now. We specialize a lot in remediation because it seems that one of the bigger problems facing Earth today is cleaning up historical mistakes. My background growing up on a farm here where we did a lot of phytochemistry and used a lot of these plants as part of the treatment systems. And so that led us today. I had a background in this. My father was a chemist and physicist, and this was just a part of my world.
Okay.
And today, here we are, it's 2011, and how far are we evolving? And how fast?
Yeah. And the company itself, what's its main product or philosophy?
Our main product is to bring in sustainable, renewable energy and technologies that make sense and can be implemented here today and be cost-effective. And one of our big specialties has sort of evolved into the area of cleaning water and remediation of spills. And this is just something that really evolved out of a whole process. And somehow we just ended up there. We're not quite sure. We all had varying backgrounds that led us to, I guess, basically where the demand and the need is today.
Okay.
Now we're finding that we live on this round planet and it's not getting any bigger, and therefore we're going to have to learn to manage it better.
Right.
And this is where we're focused. And so today, we're working constantly, on spills and cleanup ideas and new technologies that we can bring in to implement these. And that are sustainable. That's the big thing today,
Yeah, sustainability,
Well, the days of engineering ideas that always had the in and the out arrow that never explained where they came from and where they went to, I think those days are coming to an end.
Right. Right. Tom, do you have a question?
Well, we want to, get into the areas of nuclear energy, so maybe we can start the history maybe of the different accidents that people may not be familiar with.
Okay, that sounds good.
Including the ones that we do know.
Well, yeah, and we started this around the posting of a letter you have on, is there a safer replacement for current nuclear energy? And I don't believe people realize that over the years, you know, of Cold War, that during all that, we had numerous accidents in the nuclear industry, you know. From 1952 to 1958, we had accidents at Chalk River here in Canada. You know, from 57 to 85, there was 30 accidents at Savannah River in South Carolina. In 1959, we had Rocketdyne in California that nearly wiped out Los Angeles.
Oh.
And, you know, we all know about the Three Mile Island scare. Very few people, because of the Cold War, know about the 1957, you know, Kisizim accident in the USSR. I think 1986 certainly put the USSR on the map with Chernobyl. And now here we have Fukushima coming out of a country, the first recipient of the atomic bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Did we learn anything there?
That's a big question, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And so today, you know, we have to realize that, you know, this current technology that we're spouting is really actually quite old and quite dangerous. And it was designed to kill people. It wasn't designed to enrich life. And, you know, Joseph Rotblat warned us very clearly that with the end of the Cold War, nuclear power would be at its most dangerous due to complacency. And what have we got, you know? Climate change is serious, but it'll kill us slowly. A nuclear catastrophe can do this in an instant.
Yeah,
right.
And, you know, promoters of a nuclear business, I mean, they're now capitalizing on this climate change to further proliferate the nuclear business. Just at a time when, after 60 years of negotiations, we're disarming.
Yeah.
You know? And this last 60 years has left a legacy of background contamination around the globe. And very few people know that today, in order to find a true reading of a background radiation, we first need to use a very special background reader made from battleship steel. And this is steel taken from sunken ships made before the nuclear age. And the reason is, everything made since that time is radioactive to a slight degree.
Really?
Zero is no longer zero. You know, since World War II, we've been dropping bombs and testing them and doing this and doing that and having spills and accidents. And, you know, we've recently got this new word in our vocabulary called bioaccumulation, where we've realized that these things actually add up.
Over time, yeah.
And so now, you know, we have to go down in order to get and build a meter that can really read zero. We have to cut a piece out of an old ship sunk before this age. It's the only thing that isn't contaminated.
Wow. Okay.
And so, so now we have this legacy of contamination, and it you know, it's permanent, at least in a mortal human lifespan sense of the meaning of permanent.
And it's not going down, is it? It's only increasing exponentially.
It's just accumulating day by day, you know. And Fukushima here is now, you know, just putting the icing on the cake for us. You know, the very fact that we're having to watch readings in North America tells you that this isn't a local accident. This is
right.
A world accident, you know. And we're doing all this, you know, basically for 14% of our energy needs.
Which isn't a lot.
Not really. I mean, that's nothing. I mean, you know, Einstein's often thought to have been the man who started all this. Yet he knew that there was always unanswered questions and risks. And, you know, and he rightly announced Earth as the insane asylum of the universe.
Right.
You know, and I mean, all this risk for 14% energy, when we could easily remove double that with some conservation practices and have no need for this at all.
Okay, what about conservation? What are some of the things that we can do? It, better than, like, how do we increase to get that 14%, or do we just use less?
You know, I think we just use less, because today, you know, while we're focusing on the big ticket things like nuclear power plants, we're forgetting about little things like LED light bulbs that, you know, just have massive savings. We forget about timers. And And, you know, we also maybe have to look at some of our new technologies and some of the problems they're creating. I mean, instead of carrying a pen and a pencil, you know, we have to carry an electronic device to write down a note. And, you know, really, is that always necessary? You know, are the gains worth the risk?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is there risk assessment there? And, I mean, the truth is, we've learned that all over the world, we can see it from the night sky, that we have no night sky in great portions of the planet now.
Right, right.
Surely we can learn to turn off a light bulb.
Right.
There's no benefit from that. You know, if you're going to use something, you should always have some return on that investment. I mean, you know, we're using up some capital here. This is our natural capital. Why are we wasting it on lighting up something that no one is even in? You know, a light for security purpose is different than just lighting it up for the sake of it.
Right. So you were talking to me earlier about LED light strips. You said you had a strip that could run for 2 watts for 8 years?
Yeah, 2.2 watts, you know, and these light bulbs are pretty much the stock answer for these is they have a 10-year permanent lifespan. You know, that's on 24/7, 10 years. I mean, that's just staggering.
Yeah, and, it is.
You know, and I mean, it's just ridiculous that this isn't just law. And this isn't like the early LEDs that were very bright white and almost like a torture light. We now have warm whites. We have different ambient lights for them. You know, and we can make these changes here and now, not, you know, in 10 years or 20 years. We can do that today. That technology is here. It's on the floor. It's in the stores. It can be done.
Right.
But what do you think is lacking right now and the reason why we're not doing such a thing?
Well, I think possibly inappropriate values. You know, we base our society sometimes on money. And, you know, money is important, but we have to maybe teach in schools, you know, the real true values of money and what they are. I mean, it's bizarre that, you know, maybe your pet rock is worth more than a polio vaccine.
Right.
You know, what are the priorities there and what kind of values do you put to that? Yeah, I mean, it's quite simple that, I mean, if there's these products that are here and now, why are the other ones even allowed in the store when we have laws that stop you from polluting and doing this and doing that, but you allow that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. And that's political will, right?
Yeah, that's a big problem, right? The political will is
and
for many, many
and
things.
It's a big hurdle to get over, isn't it?
It is, and that's one of the reasons, you know, I'm here talking tonight is we're trying to support this letter and keep the push on that the people drive political will. And if they don't step up and say what they wish and the world they want to live in, then it's not going to happen.
Well, I think the average person, though, probably doesn't really understand all these concepts and ideas because... you know, maybe, you know, as technology changes, the everyday person is not going to be able to necessarily know unless it becomes, you know, a very well-known concept. So, you know, how do we get it out there to the average Joe?
Well, you're one method. I find it hard to believe that these kind of concepts aren't taught even at a school level, you know? And also the priorities of media. I mean, I find it kind of hard to believe that a royal wedding gets more attention than a nuclear catastrophe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's it exactly. We heard about Japan for a couple weeks, right? And then we were off to Libya. It was all about Libya, and then it was all about the royal wedding, and then it's Britney Spears cleavage. All of that stuff took over. And just hardly any, problem disappeared. The problem has not disappeared in Japan. This is an ongoing thing. So maybe that's part of the problem.
Well, the truth is the Japanese have probably about 250,000 more years to play with it.
To play with it now, yeah.
You know,
yeah, but I guess the thing is, will anybody be still alive?
It's always been one of my problems that who looks after this? What civilization has ever lasted that long?
Right. And you've actually looked into, you know, quite a bit about Chernobyl.
Yes.
Maybe we could, because that links to what's happening in Japan. It was just yet another previous example of the danger of the nuclear power solution, which is really not a solution at all unless you want to make a big load of money. It's a solution for somebody's pocketbook, I'm sure. But what about the connection with Chernobyl and what happened there? And what's happening there now?
I think one of the greatest things that most people don't know about Chernobyl is the Soviet Union didn't collapse because of a tired political ideology. It collapsed financially because of Chernobyl. You remember, at the time this happened, this was the other side of the Cold War. This was the other great superpower on planet Earth.
Yeah.
And this entire superpower was brought to its knees and collapsed by the cost of Chernobyl. That was $18 billion. And all the resources of the entire USSR to stop that. You know, how many people know that, you know, if a lot of men hadn't given their lives and all this money put in, that Chernobyl came extremely close to wiping out all human life in Europe?
Yeah.
You know, some reports are it came as close as 24 hours. I mean, that is just stunning, you know, and to this day, I mean, all over the Soviet Union, you know, you have illness, you have genetic damage, and this goes on. And as we speak right now, they're completing the new roof on Chernobyl.
Okay.
You know, this happened in 1986, and the idea is every 20 years for the next 800 years, you have to put a new roof on this at a cost of currently $1 billion for this new roof. And then in 800 years' time, you don't have to put a new roof on it anymore. You just have to sort of put a keep-out sign around the area for another 240,000 years.
Right. This doesn't sound like a sensible energy solution to me.
Well, you know, I sometimes try to put myself and say, okay, if I was an intelligent life form from another planet and I was listening to this, would I bother to stop here?
You know, expecting to find intelligent life.
Well, even life. You know,
we're always listening to out there for intelligent life. It'd be interesting if we had some of it right here.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of my things. I mean, we all talk about new technologies, and we know they exist. And you've done plenty of shows talking about all the people. We know that all these old dirty technologies are well funded when the new ones are not.
It's true.
But, you know, and I'm not playing down climate change. I'm a really big believer in climate change. However, I don't really believe in trading one poison for another and calling it progress. And, you know, we all know that all human-made creations eventually fail. But it's a matter of scale. If my solar panel here fails, it does not have the capacity to remove a civilization.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be an economy of scale. And you know, the big thing about even Fukushima, stupidity is not a natural disaster. You know,
right.
That's a nuclear catastrophe. And you can't tell me that someone did a risk assessment of this project and couldn't think of that. I mean, all the buildings in Japan, knowing that it's Japan and it's prone to earthquakes, are designed to survive it. Now, you have buildings that survive fine, and you have cars made there that have the greatest safety rating you can get, but the nuclear plant fell apart.
Yeah.
And the difference between Chernobyl and Japan was Chernobyl was one reactor, and Japan has four.
Yeah.
That's four times the fun, folks, you know, coming at you. And if they don't get their butt in gear and start doing something, anything other than just dumping water on it that leaks back into the water table, then we're going to be in, it's going to be a serious problem. It already is a serious problem. They need to get their act together, I think.
Well, you know, we also are told that when we talk about new solutions, that we're told everything has to be economically viable. Now, Japan is one of the third largest economies in the world, I believe, and, you know, Chernobyl brought down the USSR. Very few people know that nuclear plants, which are private corporations, are all underwritten by the public tax dollars. So if there's an accident, you, your children, and any other generations that might manage to survive get to pay for the cleanup. And that's if it can actually be cleaned up. You know, this is just an idea of it can. I mean, the bill for Japan will take many, many years to surface, and then even many more for the truth to surface around that. And how do you put a cost on death and deformity? You know, I personally consider that kind of incompetence to be treason against the human race. You know, and I know treason is a strong word, but you cannot tell me that the risk assessment could never have predicted an earthquake on the Ring of Fire or a tsunami in the Pacific.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And, you know, and so, you know, even if you cost out a perfectly running reactor when there's no solution for nuclear waste, yet we're soon, in the next year or so, the rough estimate is we're going to have 250,000 tons to safeguard for all human eternity.
Right.
And, you know, what civilization has ever lasted that long?
Yeah.
So we might be leaving a dump that we're not around to clean up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, is anybody right now, are they accounting the costs, you know, to the ocean life?
I don't think so. No, I haven't heard any sort of studies or anything that's been done because of the water that they're pouring on the four reactors is going back into the ocean. I don't know of anybody doing reports on that. There could be. Hey, you know, send me an email if you're doing a study on that. I'd love to hear about it.
Well, you know, we've now shown between all of this, we've now seen clearly, all of us, you don't have to be an expert to see there's no way to manage or contain a nuclear catastrophe. All there really is acceptable death figures.
Yeah. Right. And,
I mean, I could have $1.99's worth of grape juice, but if I spill it on a white rug, what's the value now?
Right, exactly. Yeah, try getting that bad boy out. You listed in your in the article that I have up on my website in the news section called Nuclear Catastrophe. It's actually gone out viral. Isn't this right, Tom? It's all over the web.
Yes.
It's all over the place.
The web, right?
Yeah, it's great. But you listed the most dangerous radioactive products. And the one they talk about on the mainstream media is iodine-131 that has a half-life of 8 days, and it accumulates in the thyroid gland. You don't hear as much about strontium-90, and you don't hear as much about, cesium-134 or plutonium-239. What's the deal with that? Or maybe I'm just listening to the wrong newscast, because all I ever hear is the iodine-131.
Well, you know, you can tell... You can spin anything to your favor, and you have to remember this is a business, and there's a lot of money at stake, and, you know, in particular Canada, I mean, many, many, many years ago when we were all born, our government had decided nuclear was going to be a product we put forward. And, you know, I mean, it's not a new idea anymore. It's an old idea, and its time is done, and the truth is, it's a very complicated subject, and it's easy to overwhelm the public. I mean, there's different kinds. You know, you have alpha rays, you have beta rays, you have gamma rays. I mean, a lot of people like to talk about the alpha because they're the soft ones that have short half-lives. You know, the truth is there's serious gamma rays in Japan right now. And most people don't know that the reason we're all panicking over these things going up in the air is, you know, you breathe these in, okay? And then they don't burn out. Radioactive particles, what they do is they strip electrons from the molecules in your cells, and they leave you electrically charged, or, you know, when you swallow them, it's called an ionized particle in the body. So these cells, they no longer have the ability to perform their functions properly. And, you know, and all of these different ones have an affinity for different cells in your body. You know, so they'll, you know, certain cells, they'll go for your bone, your marrow, liver, spleen. And these are really strange things, you know. I mean, they like to talk about the lighter things like the iodine, and they'll give you the iodine pills, you know, to saturate your thyroid so you don't, in theory, get sick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's pretty minor stuff, you know. The thing is back to that word bioaccumulation. These things just sit in you, and they just burn you up from the inside. You know, if it goes inside you, you're in trouble.
Now, does that affect people at a DNA level?
Absolutely. That's the whole point of it, you know. I really encourage everybody to get on the web and look at a film called The Battle of Chernobyl. And look it up. It's free to watch it. And I have to say that if you watch that and you're still addicted to the idea of nuclear-generated power, then my only suggestion for you is an asylum. You know?
Right.
I mean, you're going to see the real cost of Chernobyl, and that is generations of deformed children. And I don't mean mild deformity. I mean hideous deformity. And that's on the visual perspective. If you're getting such deformities on the visual, what do you think's going on beneath the visual, you know? The stuff you can't see.
Yeah, the DNA level, the minute increases that get passed on from generation to generation. How it's sort of changing the human species in a way. Well, it is, isn't it?
Well, and the trouble is, you know, we don't really know. We haven't had a nuclear society long enough to really truly know. You know, we come up with figures like, you know, it'll last a million years, and but we don't really know. It's all a calculation, and we certainly don't know the damage. I mean, you know, we live in an age today where, I mean, I have friends that are all having hips and knees and elbows and new heads. I don't remember any of this. You know, today we're dealing with massive decline in bees and you know, and I know, you know, I witnessed in the Eastern Bloc countries looking in a lake over there, I was trying to find out what the problem was, and, you know, it was hard because of translation, and I caught a fish that was half male and half female. And, you know, I think, my God, what did this? It took a day to find out what it was. It was nuclear waste.
No, really? So it wasn't, yeah. It wasn't a special kind of fish. It was a mutate.
Yep. That was mutation. And, you know, and we just don't know this. And, you know, in medicine, you have an ideology called prudent avoidance. When you don't know, you don't do something. And this is where we need to be. I mean, you know, climate change, it can kill us, and it'll kill us slowly. But, you know, the nuclear can kill us all immediately, slowly, and genetically. And who really has the right to use that kind of technology for private profit?
Mm-hmm. So we've seen what a natural event like a tsunami can do to the Japanese nuclear problem. And it's not like these things don't happen. They do happen. And we've seen the result of that happening in Japan. But you have a laundry list of other events that have happened in history, don't you?
Yeah, you know, they're well hidden, but a little searching, and they're all there, you know. Maybe the one beautiful thing of the length of time nuclear's been around is the secret acts are coming to their end. And now that all these files are being opened. And we're realizing just how close we've come time after time.
And, right.
You know, one thing we do know is if a human builds something, it can break. It's not a question of if, it's when.
When.
You know, and it's just like I said, if a technology has the potential when it fails to wipe out a civilization, I just don't think that's a good idea. Surely we can do better. That can't be evolution. At least intellectual evolution, anyway. Surely we've got to come better than this. I cannot...
Maybe the next time, you know, an accident happens, you know, where that may go, you know, how big would it be in compared to what we had up until now?
Well, I always like to ask, what is the acceptable number for dead people?
Yeah.
You know, what is it? Like, why don't you post it when you want to build one of these? Put it up and say, okay, we consider this an acceptable loss. And, you know, that I think has to be a key point, because I don't think anybody could not see the panic and the fear in Japan. You know, they've been lucky. Chernobyl, lucky. But I'd like to think that we base our stuff on something more than luck. And, you know, the other thing is Japan is far from over.
Way far from over.
You yeah. know, it could still turn around. Another earthquake could happen there tomorrow, and we could experience something beyond anything we ever dreamed in our nightmares.
Well, we're sorry, but we got to take a quick break right now, and we'll see you guys on the other side.
You've always been told to think about the alternative. Well, we can do better. We can show you. AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com will improve your health, well-being, and lifestyle through hundreds of different products, from herbs and well-being products to our large selection of specialty clothing, jewelry, and more. We ship around the world with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. There's always new products and amazing specials. Let us show you at AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com.
Hello, this is Scott Jordan, and I would personally like to thank all of our listeners for their emails of encouragement. It means a great deal to us. All of Spectrum shows are available in two formats, an MP3 stream you can listen to on our site, as well as a YouTube version. All of Spectrum shows are full length and free to listen to, and if I have my way, always will be. Tom and myself do all this work out of pocket, and freely give our time and effort to giving you, the listener, the best, most informative experience possible. I would also like to thank our listeners who have donated in the past to help with our expenses. Every donation goes directly to keeping the project alive. Thank you, enjoy, and keep listening.
Are you suffering from constant pain in the knee, shoulder, wrist, and other parts of your body? Needle-free acupuncture with Lapingo Life Pads may be the answer. Lapingo Life Pads combine ancient wisdom with modern nanotechnology and advanced engineering. They're designed to relieve pain naturally with no needles and no side effects. That's Lepingo, lapingoproducts.com.
Well, I mean, if Chernobyl had, you know, the problem that he had there, that he came so close to, you know, wiping out Europe, what can another, you know, major earthquake do to, you know, the existing accident that's there right now and the way they're trying to handle it?
Well, you know, often when people talk about increased cancer rates or increased car accidents, they say it's a question of numbers. There's more people, more cars. Well, more nuclear plants, obviously this risk factor is just going up and up and up. And you know it's just a question of time and numbers now. And the whole thing is, we don't need any of this. It's 14% of our power. And nuclear is not a sustainable energy. I mean, we've had 60 years and we haven't figured out what to do with the waste.
Yeah.
That's not a very good batting average.
Yeah, it's a bad batting average, yeah.
Yet, you know we have tidal energy, we have solar, we've got wind, we've got endless. You know, we've got hydropower, we've got all kinds of ideas, and that's not even getting into the high-tech stuff. You know, we all know there's better forms of possibly renewable or infinite energy.
Yeah.
And all we want is to see, we want to see political will and funding go to these energies, not go to ones that are absolutely insane.
Right, right.
You know, that's just not the way we're going to advance. And we know this. There isn't a single person doesn't know this. You don't have to be an expert or a scientist or anything to know this. This is common sense.
Right. But there are better ways.
Isn't the nuclear energy right now, the economics, the companies are controlling you know, these kind of things. You know, there's so much money involved that, you know, if you were to just stop it, you know, what would it do to the economics of particular countries?
Well, you know, I mean, I keep hearing from people that we can't shut off nuclear, yet Germany's just done it. People can say what they want, but I don't think anybody considers Germans to be economically stupid.
Yeah.
They're a superpower of Europe, and they don't tend to make stupid economic decisions. They've had a plan. They've published it. They've shown they can do it. If they can do it, why can't anyone else? And, you know, I believe while we phase out this nuclear energy, we should use this energy to get us into the next age, the age of maybe sustainable clean energy.
Exactly. Right. As I had mentioned earlier, too, I heard today on CBC that Italy is going to be doing away with nuclear as well.
And you know, and why not? I mean, really, truly, it's 2011. We know how to do this better. We don't need it. You know, we had dreams when we were younger that they were going to solve all these problems. We were going to have a solution for nuclear waste. We don't have one. We don't even have anything on the table. We have ideas that on this planet, which has, you know, this growing population, which no one wants to deal with, that somehow we can take vast areas of land and just put it aside for eternity to store something that is crazy.
Yeah, and they're going to need more and more and more and more areas set aside for the nuclear waste. Japan, I don't think they were very smart, but Japan just solved that by storing the old fuel rods on top of the reactor. Yeah, that was real good.
That was a good one.
Yeah, and in the fuel pools to the side. Now the problem was that when the explosions happened, it blew those rods out up to 2 miles away. Whoops! Maybe that was a design problem. You know?
But that admits that we're human and we're, you know, we make mistakes.
Yes, we do. And we tend to do it a lot. You know, the whole continuing to use nuclear energy when there are more sustainable options. I'm actually going to get into that. We've talked about the LED lights. What other sorts of sustainable energy solutions are you working with in your company and in your philosophy?
Well, you know, we are working on the, I guess you'd say the out there technologies, you know, the Brown's gas, the hydroxy gas. But the truth is, a lot of these things aren't just practical for today. Right now, as we speak, They may cost some money for solar panels, but the truth is every house can have them right now today. They can have storage. They don't, you know, they can have autonomy. They're here. They're now. And I'm pretty sure that if we ever really, truly were able to get a price for nuclear energy, we'd find out that compared to the cost of cleaning up Chernobyl in Japan, solar panels are probably almost free.
Okay.
We know the sun, you know, the sun is an infinite source of energy. We know the panels are getting more efficient. And it's, you know, it's just, it's something we can do here and now. It's not out there. It's not science fiction. We can do it. It's, you know, and it's practical. I don't personally think hydrogen's practical in a car. I mean, I don't want to get in an accident and disappear in a giant fireball.
Yeah, that would probably be bad.
You know, so personally, I like to work with what I call appropriate technologies. And those are technologies that work now. And, you know, don't give a poor person a $1 million solution. It's of no value. And if we can subsidize all the things we subsidize in this world, surely we could subsidize solar panels.
Yeah, okay. Solar panels, you mentioned Brown's gas. Interesting side note, that movie Chain Reaction with Keanu Reeves and Morgan Freeman, I believe, was all about Brown's gas. And they interviewed, the guys interviewed Brown about his technology. And then lo and behold, a couple years later, this movie pops up, Chain Reaction. And it was, you know, he was, if you look at the scientist in that movie, it's like, oh, look, it's Brown right there. But that whole movie was about it. Now, of course, they took it to the Hollywood extreme, right?
Yeah, and I'm not expounding Brown's gas with the idea that everybody can have a backyard generator. It's an advanced technology, but it's certainly a method that we could use here and now mm-hmm. for certain things. I'm using it more in the idea of using it for the heat to destroy toxic waste.
Yep, definitely that's would do that. Yep,
that's our focus right now. From a practical energy perspective, I'm not sure it's necessary. It's rather like getting rid of an ant with an atom bomb. It's
yeah. Not really I hear what you're saying. But there are applications for it, definitely.
Well, absolutely. Like a lot of people right now, they talk about the weakness of solar is battery storage. Now, I've had clients who've lived on batteries for years and years and years and years and never had a problem or an issue. Even conventional lead-acid batteries are 100% recyclable, so what's the issue?
Okay.
Any excess energy made during the day can be stored in other forms of energy, right? Can put it in something in Brown's gas. These things can be done, and they can be done now. This isn't something we need to wait 500 years to do.
Yeah, you're not waiting on a billionaire to show up with a check and say, here you go, let's get on the road and start doing this and producing this. You don't need that. It's already here and it's already now.
Yeah, these are known technologies that have been around. I mean, we've had a lot of these technologies. I always like it when I hear these new ideas come up from people, and I always think, oh yeah, Harrowsmith number two. This has been around. We're just reinventing the wheel and spinning it around. And
oh yeah, this sort of free energy stuff been around for six decades, 60 years.
Sure.
Haven't needed combustion engines for over 50 years, 60 years. Have not needed them. Do we still have them? Yep, we still got them. Do we have a little bit better combustion engine? Sure, we got a little bit better combustion engine. But have we had something that's been out there and been studied and tested and shown to work 50 years ago? Absolutely. Do you have one in your driveway? No, you don't. So we got to take baby steps in this.
Well, people have to segue in. I mean, I remember my first introduction as a teenager when one of my neighbors on the farm here had an old Model T in the shed that ran on alcohol that they used to brew during the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And, you'd start it on gasoline when it was cold and then turn the valve over to run it on the alcohol once it was running.
Yeah, that's right.
It's same internal combustion engine as anything you buy today.
It's true.
And we've done it, and we can do it. It's just willpower and desire.
And also education. Education of the general public and getting that information out there. And that's a big part of it. When I had my interview with Wade Frazier, he put a star on that one as being one of the hardest but most important parts of this strategy of getting the information out was reaching the general public and saying, educating them in the fact of reusable energy and renewable energy and infinite energy and zero point infinite and whatever you want to call it. There's a God knows there's enough names for it, but that educating the general public on this is the biggest challenge.
Well, I will tell you, they're hungry for knowledge because we get endless requests all the time. Can you put out a film? Can you put out a how-to book? We want to do it. And I like that because I can see a mindset of change in younger people coming up now. They're not willing to accept the other stuff anymore.
Well, I think if it's going to come, it's going to come from the younger people because they have that sort of a way of looking at things. Whereas if you're older, you're worried about getting up and going to work and going, you know, supporting your kids and paying the mortgage, and you've got all these other things that you need to worry about. That educating yourself on renewable energy and sustainable energy systems is way down on the list.
Well, we pay taxes to governments to support, you know, public institutions that can't be privately instituted. You know, I don't like getting my knowledge from someone who's selling something. I consider that unbiased.
That there's a possible agenda there.
Yeah, and, you know, yet most of us have to get our knowledge from salesmen. And I find that a little bit of a flawed system. Surely governments can pick up on the better ideas and get them out there, get them into places. But we can't leave that just to economics solely. Mm-hmm. That's got to happen from other levels, because the cost of this is bigger than just, you know, your hydro bill.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, you've got to do some real world accounting now.
Now, with real world accounting, that sort of leads me into another area. I mean, wouldn't we need to revamp our economy, like sort of rebuild it from the ground up? Because this one doesn't seem to be working out too well. I don't know about what you think.
Well, I think, you know, we're now hitting the age of instability, and we're not liking it. And the truth is, I mean, when you have this kind of unstable society where you don't know if a nuclear plant, what it's going to do, what the causes are, what's going to happen in Japan, just in order to encourage investors. As an investor, I think I'd want to know there's stability to this product. I'd certainly want to invest in a solar panel more than I'd want to invest in a nuclear plant right about now.
Right, yeah.
You know, your investment can disappear pretty quick. And now, admittedly, they don't have to worry too much about the liabilities, because the public are going to pick up on that one. But, you know, that doesn't help the investor. He's not going to make anything on his shares in Fukushima right now.
No, probably not. And
so I think this might be a good point that investors now start asking, you know, what is the long-term ramifications of my investment? And, you know, climate change is going to upset us. So is economy. And, yeah, it will close down some doors, but it's going to open a lot more, isn't it?
Well, what about if the human race asks that question? What is the long-term return on this investment in nuclear power? Collectively, as a species.
Well, I think if we asked that, there wouldn't be a nuclear plant open by tomorrow.
Hey, there you go. Because it just doesn't make any sense to me. Because a lot of the excuses or reasons for keeping the nuclear power is that we absolutely need it, and that our civilization would suffer, or our day-to-day living would suffer without that energy. Now, how would you answer that question?
It's 14%. You know, you're telling me, like, how much did the economy drop in the last few years?
Okay.
Probably more than 14%.
Yeah, quite a bit more than 14%. So what you're saying is we can do without it, and we can still continue to have a sustainable energy future. Because they're building more. I mean, in the United States and Canada, they're not building less, they're building more.
Well, do people feel they're getting wealthier every day today, or do they feel they're getting poorer?
Mm-hmm. I'm much poorer than myself.
You know, we have what I call a lot more of nothing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, maybe what Germany and Italy right now is doing, you know, it's showing to the rest of the world that you know, that we don't really need that. And countries like Canada and the U.S., should take some heat to that, and maybe, you know, some political will at some point, because just the other day I was talking to a politician here locally with the NDP, and, you know, part of their platform is to get rid of nuclear energy, where the liberals that we have right now are trying to build up a bunch more. So maybe, you know, people should start thinking of what the political powers are thinking, and then maybe support, you know, those areas.
And how did that meeting go, Tom? Did you feel that you got anywhere? Was there,
I came away with a little bit better understanding, in the sense that, you know, there isn't the political will because of the supposed economics, and Canada being, you know, a resource type country that supplies some of the material for the nuclear plants and such. You know, we don't want to lose that, I suppose. The powers that control the nuclear energies are way too strong economically and control the politicians. So therefore, you know, there isn't the political will to make the changes. I mean, they lobby, you know, these humongous companies lobby the politicians. So, you know, what are the little people going to do? Like us, we can't.
Well, I agree with you that they do lobby it, but, you know, there's a lot more public than there is lobbyists for the nuclear industry.
And there is, but it seems that they're winning for some reason.
Well, I'm pretty sure the lights won't go out in Germany over this.
Well, I mean, that I hope will give an understanding to the average folk out there that, you know, if big countries like Germany and Italy are going to start doing it, I'm sure many others will follow. You know, it should you know, make some difference, you know, to Canadians and Americans, and they should start pushing their politicians in the same direction.
Well, here in Ontario, we have Ontario Hydro, which, you know, it's hard to keep up with it, but I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 billion in debt.
Yeah.
And, you know, you take $40 billion into how many jobs the nuclear industry creates. I'm pretty sure we could probably create more jobs with that amount of money in a different industry.
For sure.
And I'm pretty sure that, you know, we could hire a lot of people to put up solar panels and wind generators and water mills and tidal generators and all the other things that we have right on the shelf right now. Yeah. I certainly know that if we changed $40 billion worth of light bulbs to energy efficient ones on Earth, we'd have more impact than the nuclear plant.
Well, for sure.
Yeah, guaranteed. Guaranteed. Now, are these things readily available, or is it... is it only really through private companies like yours?
No, they're ready. You can buy LED light bulbs in Walmart. I mean, we're not talking maybe the high end of you know, of the spectrum there. But they are available. And the thing is, it only takes, you know, the government to say, I want to see these on the shelf.
Right.
It just takes that comment, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we've got all kinds of make-work projects going on right now. Well, why don't we just ask them to open up a LED light bulb factory here in Canada?
Yeah, that would go a long way. And the solar panels that you guys are working with, is there anything you can tell me technically about those? I mean, when we say solar panels, we maybe think about back 20 years ago when there was those really thick sort of crappy, didn't really deliver much energy output. I mean, has the technology come forward in any way?
It's come up a bit, but, you know, in the scheme of things, even though it's, you know, we always talk we want it more efficient and more cost effective, but in the end, you know, right now, we know what they do. They're guaranteed to do it. You know, if you buy a current brand name solar panel today, it comes with a 25-year manufacturer's warranty. What can you buy that comes with that? I can't think of it. You don't get that kind of guarantee on a nuclear plant or any other form of energy.
Or car. I certainly don't.
I could get a 25-year warranty with my car.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And, you know, it's not there. I mean, these things just work. I know they don't put out a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in combination with conservation, it all helps. And we're not trying to replace every other form of energy here. we're trying to phase out one that we found to be dangerous, and we want to replace it with some. And, you know, as we're doing this, new technologies will come out, too. I mean, if there's an opening in the marketplace, you know someone will fill it.
Right, right. If they're allowed.
Well, you know, right now, I mean, if I had a great new invention here right now, it would have to be able to compete with a subsidized nuclear lobby.
Yeah, good luck with that.
At a price of energy that I'm told even our environmental commissioner can't find out what it truly costs.
Really? That's interesting.
I've asked for years and years and years, and no one will give me a true answer what it costs.
They just, you have, is it a case of they just don't know?
Well, I don't think they know. I don't think they want to know. You have to understand a good percentage of nuclear energy is used in military aspects. You know, that nuclear warheads have to be maintained and topped up.
Right.
And a percent goes to that. That's not really open information. And and in the meantime, we know we have technologies that we need right now. We need oil right now. We can't make that shift off of it instantly.
Right.
But we can stop wasting it. I mean, you know, a jet flying over Libya tonight probably burned more energy than I'll burn in the rest of my life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so you're saying it's the abandoned use of this stuff, the overuse, as it were.
If we dedicate oil to the things that only oil can fulfill, I'm sure we'll be fine. By the time we truly, I mean, we'll never run out of oil. All that will happen is it'll become too expensive for things like burning in your furnace.
Right. Yeah. The military will still have access to it. You just won't.
Well, sure, but, you know, who's the enemy?
Yeah.
The enemy is whoever the powers that be say the enemy is. And then they go on, mainstream media to convince you who the enemy is. And once you've bought and swallowed that pill, then you're saying, rah, rah, go Obama.
Well, you know, the two biggie nuclear accidents we're talking about here have done more generational damage than any war.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's bad. That's bad.
You know, I mean, World War II is over. This accidents war is going to last a long time.
And like you said before, there's more than just the two big names of Chernobyl and Fukushima. There's a heck of a lot more than that that you mentioned when we talked to you earlier about the list of all the problems. And there's also there's been nuclear sub incidents as well, haven't there?
Sure, and who knows how many military-based accidents there have been. I mean, those are all confidential and frozen up. We don't find out about them, you know?
Yeah. Right. I mean, they'd be under the Security Act, wouldn't they?
Yeah. They said that the 20th century was one of the most secretive centuries in the history of human race. Yep. You know, we're only now having documents open from World War II.
Exactly.
That's true.
And, you know, we'll never...
But don't you find it interesting that you know, not, there hasn't been even a couple of months past now that Germany and Italy all of a sudden are you know, want to do away, and it's not necessarily coming from the public. It seems that the governments have all of a sudden decided to do such a thing. You know, it wasn't necessarily put out to the public and, you know, have some kind of discussion. You know, they just put it out there straight up.
We don't know right now what the end result will be to the economy of Japan. I mean, if you were in charge of a country right now, you know, you look at today and tomorrow, and the truth is one accident can just... You're gone.
Yeah, maybe, you know? maybe they're looking at Japan and sort of fearing that scenario happening in their backyard and going, oh, maybe we should just get out of here. Get out of this.
You know, while watching this thing on TV for Japan, you know, it seemed right off the bat that Japan already had problems dealing with the situation and you know, the disposition of all the people that had that got displaced from the area. I mean, and even recently when I was listening and, you know, seeing on the internet, you know, they still haven't been able to find places for these individuals. You know, they're having trouble feeding them and, you know, doing the stuff that needs to be done. And a lot of it seems to be economic, you know, is that they can't afford to do it.
Well, if Japan can't afford to do it right, what's going to happen if there's an accident in many of these other countries that are coming into the nuclear...
Yeah, exactly. That will become a big, big problem.
And just barely being able to afford to come into the nuclear age. One accident would wipe them out.
Truly. You know that it would become a... Well, it already is an international problem, even Japan, right? I mean,
right.
No country on its own can deal with this. So, you know, and like I said, we don't even know the long-term effects here. We don't know how it's going to affect the economy of even the United States and Canada from fallout landing over here.
Yeah.
We don't know what damage to markets is going to take on.
Oh, but there's going to be no damage at all because iodine-131 only lasts for 8 days and it can't make it over here to Canada or the States. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the only thing we have to worry about, right? Iodine-131?
Yeah, so they say. I mean, you know, this is another thing. I think universally around the globe now, less and less people trust governments.
Yeah.
And, you know, why did we bother disarming? What was the point of it all if we just replaced it with something else? If the global terror threat is as it's said to be, don't you think these are high-risk installations?
Yeah, well, you would think so, if that threat is really what they say it is. Terror, terror, terror. Be afraid.
And if climate change is only going to increase, then I think we can easily project from that that we're going to have more tsunamis and more earthquakes.
Yeah, I think that's an easy route to take there. And who knows, the next one could be worse than Japan. Imagine that.
Well, I mean, we've been told here in Ontario that we're really, really safe because we don't have earthquakes and stuff like that and tsunamis. But, you know, there is talk now that we have this New Madrid fault line running down the Mississippi.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that would create a few problems.
That could possibly...
Well, actually, a few years back, and maybe not that long ago, actually, a couple of engineers showed that right underneath Lake Ontario, right through the power plant, that there was a big displacement of the rocks, you know, the formation, and it shows how the plates have gone over each other, and there's a huge fault line right under it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I mean, and the truth is, even at that, we're all guessing. And, you know, so if you don't know something, why would you risk it? And I could see sometimes in life we have to risk things. We have to risk every day. But why make stupid risks?
Yeah.
Why risks that we don't have to make? You know, we're not at war. We don't need this. Our society won't cease to exist if we change to something else. All we're asking them to do is change to something else, not to stop breathing or stop living or not have lights. You know, we've realized there's better ways to do things. We've also realized that, you know, the science behind nuclear energy as we know it may be flawed.
Yeah.
And that there are many scientists working on cleaner, better versions of it. And
mm-hmm.
You know, and to sum it up to me, Albert Einstein, you know, he taught us many things, but the lesson I find most appropriate here is that, you know, a smart man solves a problem and a genius avoids it in the first place.
Exactly.
Mm. So maybe we should have avoided it, or when we figured out that it was a problem, which we should have been able to figure out in the first place. I mean, it was pretty glaring. You mentioned earlier that the whole science of... the whole science of nuclear energy came from the creation of the bomb.
Yeah, this was not a peace-loving invention. This was an idea to destroy people. And
exactly.
It seems that it's still living up to that.
Yeah.
It is.
Even with disarmament, how many bombs are still out there that can potentially, cause a problem, if it ends up in the wrong hands or, accidents or who knows what?
It's valid right now that possibly instead of mining more uranium, maybe we start using these things up and burning them up in there and getting rid of them.
Yeah.
And we don't need them. There's no need for it anymore. There is no Cold War. There's no giant superpowers. And we've pretty much figured out nobody can win from this game.
Right.
And there are people working on cleaner forms of using it. And, the ultimate to me is, you can't get uranium without using fossil fuel to mine it in the first place anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like we have an endless supply of that stuff.
Right.
It is finite.
Do you have a website for your company?
We do, but we don't really. Not really a lot we put on there, but we have millenniuminstitution.com.
Okay.
We post things sporadically.
good. And you have products that you offer, or are you mainly working from a cleanup point of view? Or
from a services point of view.
Services, okay.
We're working in solution, right?
Right.
This is the idea. Let's look at things and evaluate it and critically think it, and how can we resolve it?
Well, I think that's a good way to go.
Critical thinking needs to be a part of everything today. Really and truthfully, we can't afford these kind of mistakes anymore. We can't afford them financially, but we can't afford them just from a human perspective. It's just silly.
From a human civilization, yeah.
The thing is, there's so many projects right now that, a lot of scientists and a lot of individuals, including some of the folks that we're familiar with and work with, that, have potential solutions, that could be much bigger and much broader than the ones that we have right now. And all they need is maybe, minimum type of money is just to get their projects working. And yet, it's almost impossible to find funding for those sort of things.
Well, I think we've come to the end, perhaps. At least I hope we've come to that end of unrealistic return on investments that were expected, we kind of lived through a period where investors expected a return on their money within 3 years, and they wanted to triple their profits. And I mean, those days are over, I think. It's time to realize that, maybe there's longer, slower-term investments that are more stable.
Well, given our economic outlook now, I don't see that sort of thinking as sustainable. They want money right away, that they want a return on their investment in 3 years. Given our economic outlook now, I don't see that as sustainable. So they're going to have to change their expectations, whether they like it or not.
And I think some things in our world shouldn't be left solely to private people to fund. I mean, the reason we have governments and institutions is to do things on a scale that individuals can't do. And so we pay taxes to support a government to take care of issues that are beyond the little person. And surely sustainable energy and food and things like that should be on that agenda, education. And those are things that maybe need to be funded in a different means.
Right.
One of the things that I was thinking, imagine, the $50 million that was spent recently on the G20 here, what that kind of money could have done to actually accomplish a hell of a lot more than what these guys accomplished by sitting in there for a day or two to the discussion. You know, there's so many individuals out there that are working towards all these different alternative ideas. And if they have that kind of funding, you know, from government, they are wasting our money constantly out there, we would be a hell of a lot further.
Sure, put it up as a prize. Put a lottery on it.
Yeah, you like, well, what the hell do we need a G20 for? To spend $50 million for what? What did it accomplish? And you know, look at the problems that it created for that matter.
Well, I'd like to see the next Lotto 649 is the person who solves the particular problem of the week.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense, wouldn't it?
That would make a lot of sense. And boy, you'd have a lot of people coming out of the woodwork who've had ideas that just no real incentive.
No, but I mean, look at all this money. They're making all this money. They're spending all this money in wars and stupid things that you know, really accomplish nothing, you know, other than getting people killed more, you know, and it is nuts. It's a nutty world we live in here.
That was my Einstein quote of Earth is the insane asylum of the universe.
Exactly. And you know, and the thing is, the public is the one that has to make those changes within the political system to be able to have, you know, the balls to make the changes. And you know, maybe, you know, we're not approaching it the right way to educate the public the right way.
Well, maybe every person listening to this show tonight, you know, the momentum's there. All they have to do is ask their politician clearly, what's your view on energy going to be before I vote? You know, well, what do you think of this? Where are you going to put your money? What are you going to do? You know, keep that pressure up. I mean, you know, like I said, if these nuclear plants are closed down, something will fill the void. That is the whole basis of the free market economy.
You know, it's funny. It reminds me of something that Ralph Ring commented. He said something once about a story. Ralph Ring worked with Otis T. Carr back in the 50s, I think. And he went and worked with a company because he had some ideas of, you know, focusing lasers and stuff like that. And he thought, well, what about if you just pulse the laser? And he went home and he, you know, made up this gadget and brought it. It worked, you know. It did what he wanted it to do. And he came into work next day, and they're all government-funded. He worked with a company that was government-funded, and he said to his boss, hey, I've got this idea. And his boss, oh, okay, come show me. Because his job was to test this beam, right, and just do the test over and over. And you'd have to use these parts that would burn out, and then they'd go get another one. Well, the part was like a couple $100, but they didn't care. They were government-funded. They'd go get another part, put it in, burn it out, go get another one. And he said to his boss, I figured it out. This is the way we can do it, and it won't cause any problems, and it solves the problem. And it's just this easy. And his boss said to him, closed the door, drew the windows, the shades on the windows, and said, Ralph, I know it's that easy, but we're not paid to come up with a solution. We're paid to ask the questions. We're paid to do the experiments, not to come up with solutions. And that was a big wake-up call for him because he went, really? Wow. We're not paid to answer the questions. We're paid to do the experiments. That's a head ringer, that one. Because that is a microcosm of how the macrocosm works in this system. The corporate, political, and educational system. That is a microcosm of the macrocosm problem. And I think what we got to get beyond that. This was 50 years ago. So we got to get beyond the problem of just doing something to do it. In other words, nuclear energy, because you mentioned earlier that nuclear plants, they're corporations. They're privately owned. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's, you know, Fukushima is a private company.
Yeah.
Bruce Nuclear, private company.
It exists to make money. It's there for a profit.
And, you know, and I don't think we should probably put the entire onus on private corporations to solve our human problems. They are really good tools for distributing and getting things out.
Right.
But, you know, these problems, you know, there's plenty of people with the solutions, but they need a venue. I have never met an inventor in my life who does not have a story of being ripped off.
Oh, totally. Another guy, what was his name? I can't remember his name right now, but he had invented stuff, and he was working within the military complex at the time. And they told him flat out that they own what he makes. It's not his. He can have maybe some commercial use after he gets out. But as long as he's in the military, anything he makes is theirs. It's their domain to use and release to the public if they deem necessary, which they generally don't.
You know, you've got too many chiefs.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, they're obviously the system we've had has not been a good tool to deliver this. I mean, we're still running on the leftovers of the Second World War. I mean, our society's set up still in this military mindset. And, you know, we've never really got out of it. Our corporations are almost set up like military organizations, left over from the time they were making armaments.
Right.
That's
a bigger question, isn't it? That means that there's more things in human society that have to change their perspective. They have to alter in some way their viewpoint of the way things work. Maybe the way things work, maybe they don't work at all.
You know, I think our values just are shifting. We're starting to shift now. People are fully aware of the problems. I think the biggest problem with most people is the frustration that they don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I don't think that's a new problem. I think Henry David Thoreau said the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation.
Oh, that's a good one, yeah. Maybe that is it. They want to do something, they just don't know what to do.
You know, well, this is why I believe that the push is here. I mean, there are organizations out there like you know, Planetary Association for Clean Energy, and they're trying.
Okay.
And, you know, but we just really need venues now that these can get from inventor to marketplace.
Right. And Millennium, your company that's doing its bit.
Yeah, I once learned something from Greenpeace when I was young, and I thought it was a really great thing I learned, that if you really have a good idea and you really want it to go around the world, have it make money. It'll have a life of its own.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and I just am trying to take ideas and see if we can put them into a business model. Because
right.
Then they'll have a life of their own, rather than trying to push a big ball up a big hill for eternity. Because, you know, ideas like that, I mean, the minute the grant or the donation stops, it rolls back down the hill.
Right.
And, you know, this is where this is what momentum is about. Let's get it moving here. We're here now. We've realized that this isn't working out. Country after country is now getting on board to put this down. And now there's a momentum to replace it with something. So maybe this is a time where, you know, an astute government leader could see an opportunity to use this as a venue to push their country into a new technology. I mean, what's going to be the next computer of the future? It's going to be an energy device, probably.
Yeah. Tom, do you remember what Germany and Italy said they were going to replace the nuclear? Or you said they were just going to stop building? Or
No. I mean, they're going to stop using them altogether. Germany has given a time limit, I believe, 2021. Italy, like I said, this was an announcement they just made today, and there was no specific details as timeline and such, but I'm sure within the next few days we will know all that as well.
Okay.
Germany has announced they're going to do this without power outages, without importing nuclear power from other countries, without building new coal plants, and only with a modest increase in the cost of electricity. Yeah. They're going to build some coal-fired or some new gas-fired plants just to make up for the flexibility needed. And, you know, because they also plan to reduce their carbon dioxide emissions at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay, so they do have something in place to replace this energy deficiency.
Yeah.
And, you know, I believe they're claiming that this shutting this down is only going to increase the cost by 0.006 to 0.008 euros per kilowatt hour. So that's, you know, we're talking a penny.
Yeah, sounds like a deal to me. They don't have to, yeah. Now, they're going to have to, are they going to be decommissioning all of the nuclear plants, tearing them down? I mean, that in itself sounds like a bit of a dangerous, because you got to put that stuff somewhere, don't you?
Well, under control, it can, you know, it's not dangerous when it's controlled. It's dangerous when it's out of control.
When it's out of control. Okay. But to be honest, I mean, those rods are still going to take up space somewhere on a landfill somewhere.
Unfortunately, all human existence has to carry historically bad ideas. We do it every day in infrastructure and everything, you know. It's mm-hmm. just something we have to carry. You know, there's always been, you know, the idea that one day we'll figure out how to do it better, maybe.
Right.
Someone will come up with a solution.
So the last generation can say, whoops, to the problems they cause to the next three or four or five generations.
I think every generation is born with something bad that they inherited, you know, and it's just how we do it. I mean, and it's also, I guess, a question of what we want to leave behind is our time in history.
You know? And I think that more people are waking up, don't you, Tom? I think that...
Well, definitely, I think there's a bigger push, but I think, you know, what Germany, Italy is doing right now is you know, creating a wake-up call, I think, for a lot of folks out there. And you know, the fact that it happened, you know, that these two countries now decided to do it very soon after this you know, big accident, which, even though the media hasn't pushed it as being, you know, a lot worse than it is, you know, for those countries to make those changes and that fast, you know, shows you that it's a very serious problem.
You know, we don't, like I said, we don't know what the long-term effects to Japan are. It could destroy it as a nation.
Exactly.
Why would you do that? I mean, truly, as a person in a position of power, surely to do something like that leads to an accident of that magnitude would qualify as high treason on a level never achieved by any spy I've ever read about.
Exactly.
Now, I think, and I've said this on the show before, my opinion of what's happening with Japan is that Japan will eventually be an empty island. And I like your concept about the sign, the keep out sign. I'm going to use that and adapt it to Japan having a big sign stuck in it, say, come back in 200,000 years.
Yeah, don't stop here.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, we're talking about a very old culture too, right? That, you know, this culture's been around for centuries and centuries. It has endless philosophies. And yet, in a matter of a few short decades, you wiped it out.
Wiped it out, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I kind of wonder, you know, being you know, a nation of you know, people that, you know, eat a lot of fish, you know, being an island and such, and right now with the water being contaminated all around it, you know, how is that going to be affecting the people and the consumption that they're having right now of those fish, and, you know, what's happening in the whole area, and how far this thing is going to go?
Certainly they'll lose a great percentage of their food autonomy, and they'll be reliant on other countries to provide that.
And you got to remember that, you know, that food is shipped as well. That's shipped all over the world. There's stuff in those waters that are shipped everywhere.
Well, yeah, because the currents will take them, you know, everywhere else too.
Perhaps that's going to be the next new great economy, is Geiger counters to inspect your food.
Now that you mentioned Geiger counter, you mentioned before you came on the show that you have a Geiger counter right there with you.
There's a Russian Geiger counter sitting here, and we can maybe listen to the sound of Chernobyl.
Yes, I'd like to hear what Chernobyl sounds like.
So to walk around Chernobyl today, that's what you'll hear in your headphones, the constant beep, 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 meaning we've got a off-the-scale strontium 90. And, you know, that's the sign, that's the sound of death. That's the sound of run.
Yeah, that's the sound of, hey, you're dead. It may not be today, but...
That is really kind of crazy to me that that's the epitome of our society today. That's what we've achieved. This is what our fathers fought wars for democracy for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't believe this was the future they envisioned for their children and their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren.
Well, do you remember what was it back when I was a kid? We had a show called The Jetsons. And I don't think The Jetsons was put that far into the future. And you know, they had robots and all of this stuff. And I didn't see any nuclear plants in The Jetsons. Did you, Tom?
No.
I don't see any nuclear plants in Star Trek and Star Wars. Did you? But the thing is, we as a species have the capacity to live the life of Star Wars. And, well, I don't want to, you know, have a big war in space, but, okay. A peaceful version of Star Trek and Star Wars. But we're holding ourselves back with all of these antiquated technologies that we're hanging on to. And I can't see it sustaining us. I just can't. I can't see it. Michio Kaku talks about a Type 0, Type 1, Type 2, and Type 3 civilization. Guess where we hit on that scale? We're zero, boys. We're the zero scale. And if we're going to get to Type 1, Type 2 civilizations, we've got a ways to go. And it's not like it's an impossible task. That's the point. It's not impossible. We have the capacity to do that now. Not in 100 years, not in 50 years, now. But it's just this old paradigm that keeps us rooted in the past and old ways of doing things. What's your thoughts, Peter? Do you think that we can go there?
I don't think we have a choice anymore. You know, I think everything comes to tipping point. And I think my hat's off to countries that are leading the way now. Maybe they do it by example or by embarrassment. I don't really care which. But the fact is, we can, and we don't need the other stuff, so why would we do it? It's not the future. It may be seen as a current way to panic our way out of the climate change problem. But, you know, that's called out of the fat and into the fire.
Right.
I was kind of hoping we'd solve climate change by solving it, not by putting a Band-Aid on it. You know, that's not a solution. That's a silly idea. We know there's this risk. Yes, we used to play down the risk, and there's risks to everything, but the last few years has shown us that these risks can happen, do happen, and when they do, we just have no control over them. And I don't believe that if I were to go into the government right now and said, I have a new solution for energy, and it's great, and by the way, if it goes wrong, I'm going to wipe you out, I don't think they'd give me a permit to start.
No. And yet...
I don't believe if you hired an architect to build an apartment building and on the premise that every few years it fell down, this is not going to happen. And, you know, they've managed to solve these problems. And like you already said, this is not an unsolvable problem. The solutions are there. They just need to be put into practice. And I believe that Germany and Italy now will set the stage to be world leaders because they will have the solution put into place because they'll have the demand for it.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that, you know, people are listening to the show and you know, in general, we need to get education out there that the public understands that, you know, this is a big, big problem that needs to be resolved. And you know, they should go to their politicians and see what their, you know, ideas are and try to follow what Germany and Italy is doing right now.
Peter, do you have an email address that anybody could contact you? See if any of our listeners have questions.
Yeah, it's on our website there. It's all ready in there for anybody to ask. And
And your website address again?
We can. www.millenniuminstitution.com, one word.
Okay, and the name you'll be looking for is Peter Terrell. If you want to email him, his email is on the website. And I'll have a link to his company and his personal email in his bio section. So if you have any questions, if you want to help out, if you have any suggestions, you know, you can either get a hold of us at spectrumradionetwork.com or you can get a hold of Peter. And I'm sure he'll be happy to answer any questions you have. And is there anything that you guys are doing now proactively? Are there any conferences that you're aware of? Are there any speaking engagements or anything like that is coming up in the near future?
I think probably that sort of thing is probably posted through the Planetary Association for Clean Energy.
Okay.
And they would probably be their link on that. I mean, there's something going on every day somewhere in the world pushing this. You know, at this point right now, we just really would like everybody who hasn't seen the film on Chernobyl to watch it online and then take their thoughts to their politicians and keep this momentum moving, and let's set the bar a little higher for the next generation.
Let's. And I will actually put a link to that video on your bio as well. And I'll put a link to the article that you helped write, Nuclear Catastrophe, in our news section, and that talks about the everything that we've been talking about tonight. Okay?
Well, it's been great, and thanks for coming on, and hopefully maybe we can do it again in the near future with happier news.
And yeah, we'll be able to talk about the solution.
Hey,
and where to buy it.
And that would be a great show. Yeah, I want more shows where we're talking about where you gotta go to get the best solution. You know, those are happy shows. I want to do more of those. We're gonna talk to you guys next week. And good night.
Good night again. Thanks again. Bye bye.
Hey, thanks for having me on.